Welcome to Observations. For those of you who are in the inner circle, if you will, not that we don't have any organization and there's no hierarchy in our group, but there are a number of us who are part of the covenant who communicate four or five times a week and share ideas and share correspondence that we have with others. And if you're among those who are listening to this program, you know that I engaged, I think it was between the various letters and responses and rebuttals, that probably now 150 pages and 30 some odd communications with a fellow who will go nameless, who wrote me and said that, in essence, the purpose of the letter was to said, it isn't remotely possible. I cannot believe that the learned and scholastic translations from esteemed Bible publications can all be wrong, and your translations be right. Pray tell, what are your credentials? What university and seminary did you attend to qualify you to even attempt such an undertaking? Do you recall that letter, Kirk?
I do. I'm trying to think what Moses' credentials were. Who wrote it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, what school did Moses attend to prepare him to convey the Torah? Yeah, to the Torah. Yeah, what seminary did you attend? Anyway, it was really an interesting discussion, and our good friend Richard, who not only listens to these but posts them on his blessyahweh.com website. You know, don't panic. We're not going to mention the guy's name. We're not going to even repeat anything that he had to say beyond this introduction. But we are going to spend some time after Kirk shares a story or two on what I learned as I was progressing and searching Yahweh's word for a better understanding of Yahweh's provision for life and what we need to do should we want access to it, because God has announced that he has withdrawn it. So, we will turn to that in a moment. It's one of the most comprehensive sojourns of discovery I've taken in quite some time. It took me four full days to, in fact, if you want to deal with the translations that led to it, I have a little over a week in what we're going to share on the next few programs. But Kirk, you said you had a story that you wanted to share, and a bit of serendipity in terms of discussion, as you were sitting in an automotive body shop and had some time to verify if something that I shared last Friday night, because last Friday night we spent almost the entire time talking about one translation, you know, one sentence, and two words within that sentence as to what they actually mean and how challenging it is and how really rewarding it is to closely examine and carefully consider what God had to say. So first, what's your story, and then we'll go into the
investigation. The first one is regarding a friend of mine who, about a year ago, I spoke to her about Yahweh, and she was very receptive. She had already walked away from Christianity. She had been a Catholic and so on.
Yes.
And so she was very receptive. She immediately started doing what Terry and I did when we first were confronted with this. We read, we started with yada yada. She started with an introduction to God and yada yada. In fact, I think she bought Introduction to God in a hardback form. And she was reading every day, and I would see her once a week, and we would chat. So we had long discussions, and she was just soaking it up like so many of us do. And a little background on her: she's a widow, and she's the primary caregiver for her 24-year-old, or 26, he's somewhere between 24 and 26, year-old son who has autism. And so as she was reading and so forth, and I should say that he's what we would call a low-functioning autistic child, and she's been his caregiver and dedicated most of her life now, all of his life, to him. And when he was born, they didn't
circumcise. Mothers are special.
Yes, mothers are extraordinarily special. She's walked away from a lot and suffered a lot and done without. So she's a real special person to me.
Yeah, she sacrificed a lot on behalf of her her son. So,
absolutely.
Hey, the truth about Iowa and the set-apart spirit ought to be very appealing to her because she shares a lot in common with God.
That's my thoughts exactly.
Yeah.
So, but she has a uncircumcised son, and she understands the covenant agreement, and she understands that children can't participate, or anyone can't participate, male, if they don't if they're not circumcised.
Right.
So she did what she went to the doctor. And wanted to have it done, and they kind of rebuffed her. There is a rather large cost involved, and she has she is very much on a budget. So that
I've heard as much as $5,000.
Right, and the insurance wouldn't cover it. So she also was afraid of his reaction because being autistic, it's all new to him, and it would be kind of difficult.
Right.
And so it was quite a block, I think, an obstacle for her, because she wants her son, just like we want all our family members to be with us. I mean, he can communicate with her.
Yeah.
He knows his mama's love and so forth.
Right.
So she wants him to be part of the family.
Right.
But she knows this is a difficult thing, and she didn't know what to do.
Yeah, it's one of those things when some women wrote me originally as I was talking about the terms and conditions of the covenant, and you know, a man cannot engage in a covenant unless he is circumcised. And the instruction is actually for parents to circumcise their children, their sons, on the eighth day. My response to women has always been, who is it that you think God is talking to when he says circumcise your sons on the eighth day? You know, he's talking more even to moms than he is to dads.
Yeah.
And so, you know, circumcision is not just a male thing. It's about moms making sure that their sons are circumcised because it's their way of affirming their commitment to the covenant and to marking their children with the sign of the covenant so they remember and so that the parent remembers to raise them so that they come to know Yah and choose to participate in his family. So it is very much a woman's responsibility. So as a mother, I congratulate her. She knows this is important.
Well, she knows it's important, but it was such a,
there's a lot of issues.
Yeah, she was getting to the point where, you know, she was actually thinking, well, maybe it's better that I die without, you know, if he's going to die and he's not going to be with me and I can't say, you know, do this, that, and the other. So in any case, it became quite an obstacle. Last week, she took her child to see that doctor because he had an infection down there. And the doctor was not there. They gave her to another doctor. And that doctor examined her son and said to her, and he says, look, I've just examined your son. I have a recommendation. He said, I need to circumcise your son to stop this infection.
Right.
And I'll arrange it with the insurance company that it takes place, and they'll cover the cost. And, you know, I've done over 5,000 circumcisions, I told her. And she said, well, what about him hurting and everything? Because this is very difficult to care for someone who's in great pain, don't know why.
Yeah, at that point, I think if I had been her, I'd just say, thank you very much. May Yah bless you.
This is basically where it went. But she he said, look, this is not... It's not going to hurt. We got a way to do it. He won't feel a thing. So her response to him was, she looked at him and she said, okay. And then she shared that story with me, and I about fell out of my head.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? You know, I got two letters.
But if you were looking, if you walk into a Java, and there's a big rock in the way, he'll move the rock.
Yeah.
If you can't move it, he'll move it. If you can't walk over it, he'll move it.
That's right. He doesn't want you to be lazy. He doesn't want you to sit there on your duff.
Every plan she could to get this done, didn't know what to do. She decided to.
You know, I received two letters just this week on adult men who had come to know Yahweh, reading Yada Yah, an introduction to God, and come to know Yahweh, fully engaged and committed to the covenant, but were not circumcised. And guess what? both made exactly the same decision.
Right.
Doesn't matter what it costs. You know, we're talking about inheriting the universe. We're talking about being invited into Yahweh's home. We're talking about living forever. Is there anything that I could ever spend money on that would have that kind of return?
A return? Wow.
Yeah, so two adult men today. You know, it is amazing that over these past 10 years, probably that's the average, a couple a week. People that write and say, this week was four people. Three of the four, I didn't even know. I had never met, never heard of, that wrote and said, I have been reading for years, just quietly, made contact, and they might, say I've come to know Frank or come to know Larry or come to know you or somebody, that they've come to know, and maybe it's Richard, but that they... are part of the covenant. And, I've been doing this now for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Two or three a week gets up to be over 1,000 people around the world. We've made a heck of a difference.
Well,
now, we haven't done anything other than that we have taken the time to investigate what Yahweh has said, to reveal his words as completely and accurately as we can, to share the insights that we've been able to derive by this study, and to make that available to anyone who is interested. There's no sacrifice in doing any of that. It's all been extremely rewarding and fun. But it has made an enormous difference in people's lives.
It is, boy, what a journey!
Yeah. So, you said that you were
yes.
Spending some time at an auto repair shop. I mean, this is a fascinating story. I mean, I just want to see old Terry there at the. Excuse me, Kirk, your wife's Terry. Kirk at the old automotive repair shop, and you decided, I'm bored out of my mind. I need to be doing something.
Well, I knew it was going to be a while, so I took my notes down and I was reading ahead. I know we're still in six, and I won't get there today either.
Mm-hmm.
But I was reading 8,
mm-hmm.
and it was
this is chapter 8 of Observations for Our Time,
right? And
which
and
is a chapter for those that are listening here. Since these have not been, I think they are posted now on Richard's site, blessyahweh.com. The first 8 chapters are, but chapter 8 is the entire chapter is a detour. Now, we were covering the story of God's rebuke of religious man in Yashayah, and three times in succession, he mentioned Zion. And so I was curious and wanted to identify what Zion represents, where Zion was, what Zion means. And that led to a chapter where some 80 pages, and the entire chapter is a detour. Because it turned out to be not have anything to do with the location of Zion, but instead who Zion is,
mm-hmm.
and what Yahweh had to say about this individual that he has called Zion. Zion means signposted along the way, and the Zion is David.
Yes,
Yahweh's beloved son.
It's very obvious when you...
And so the chapter is insights into the very complex and stunningly surprising relationship between Yahweh and Dod, and how real it is. And there are some insights and some discussions I was mesmerized almost. That's what chapter 8 is about. It's about surprising communications that come from parts of the of Yahweh's testimony that very few people pay much attention to.
Yeah.
You know, the book is primarily based that chapter on Chronicles.
Yeah, not the sexy one.
No, Chronicles.
Let's go read Chronicles.
Chronicles. And who would have thought that such delicious nuggets could be found in Chronicles. Anyway, that's chapter 8. So anyway, you were there reading chapter 8.
So I took the 2 hours I'm waiting there, and I'm reading that, and I made a note. I said, okay, based on the conversation we had last week where you said you went through every aspect of the word completely and redid even Asher, your favorite word.
Yeah, my favorite word. Yeah, Asher is the word. I mean, if it were not for Asher, I would not be here.
Yeah.
I mean, that one word is
Yahweh,
that...
Yahweh, I wouldn't be here. I mean, if it wasn't for...
Yeah.
Yahweh, that was my trigger, and whatever it is, it all leads to the same place.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I wrote down off in the column. I said, okay, now look up Bana and look up Asher.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the ordinary thing that I do, which is 6 or 7 lexicons, and I write all the stuff down. And what I found, I started with Bana, and I went all the way down. I said, my gosh, there's 375 of these related Bana words. So I said, okay. So I haven't done anything else this week other than these two words. So I went through all of that, bump, bump, bump. And then
Henna would have to be between Asher and Henna, they have to be two of the most interesting words.
Mm-hmm.
And what's amazing is that in English Bibles,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have Asher rendered as if it were some kind of a mix between a preposition and a pronoun. I mean, it's a whom or which or where or that kind of thing. And they never go, the word has meaning. They never talk about the meaning of the word. And Henna is rendered as behold 99.9% of the time. And you know, you just behold. Okay, what does behold mean? People just say, well, behold, just okay. Sound it, say it because it sounds religious, and then go on. Behold, you know. And yet, oh my goodness, this word is extraordinary. This word tells you the proper perspective from which you can capitalize on Yahweh's provision for life. This word says every bit as much an explanation of his name as anything ever written. So anyway, you were looking up these words, huh?
Yeah, I looked up Asher and I looked up Bana rather than Henna because we covered that a lot. But I went through Bana, and because it says to build and it sounds straightforward in this fashion and to rebuild and to restore and to have children. To I mean, what are you going to build?
You know where the single most interesting reference to Bana would be if you were to pay any attention to what is considered to be the basis of Christianity?
Go ahead.
All right. When Yosha spoke to Shimon Kefesh, and he told him that upon this rock I will build my mikra.
Yes.
And it was upon is all in Hebrew. Zoth is this. Rock is sur. I will build is bana. And my mikra would be the title of Yahweh's 7 invitations to meet based on the verb kara, to be invited, to be called out, and to meet with God. That's what he said. And the word that he used was bana.
Yeah.
Now, Christians will think, no, he said, upon this rock I will build my church.
Yeah.
No. That is absolutely and unequivocally not what he said. He used bana. And he said he was going to build his mikra, his invitations to be called out and to meet with God. Okay, so you were studying Bana.
Well, I went through 375 of these guys, and I'm going all the way down, and I'm saying, whew, so I get down about 300 and, I don't know, 60-something, and I saw this word. It was Ben-Yah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, wow, that's interesting, because it's got Yah's name in it. So let's look up Ben-Yah.
Mm-hmm.
And it means Yahweh has built up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fascinating. That's easy to find. But here was the thing that really tickled me to death here.
Mm-hmm.
And in light of having already read the thing where the email where that you shared with the guy who said, I'm going to stick with my Christian people who write this stuff. They're scholars.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the 3 most Christian-friendly lexicons to look this up. Same. And Brown's, Driver's, Briggs.
Mm-hmm.
Strong's and the New American Standard Concordance.
Yeah, those are the 3.
The 3 sources that are the most relied on by a Christian.
Right. And then almost always give the Christian myth before they will even attempt to define the word.
Well, guess what they did on number 1141E?
What was that?
They said that this is from Bana,
mm-hmm.
and the word Yah,
mm-hmm.
which is the proper name of the God of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And
by the way, he is the God of Israel, that is true, but he also happens to be the one and only God of the universe.
So my question, and in the parentheses, it has Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, and this Yahweh, Yah has been written 6,824 times when you look that part up.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, in the Masoretic text,
uh-huh.
that is correct.
Right.
The Dead Sea Scrolls reveal another 132 times, that Yahweh was written in the original text, that the Masoretes edited out of their text, and if you add those two together, you end up with 7,000.
7,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so you've got 7,000, the number we key on all the time to show
mm-hmm.
his plan. We've got his name, and we have his name spelled correctly.
Mm-hmm.
We have his nickname, Yah, being spelled correctly.
Mm-hmm.
We are declaring that this is the name of the God of Israel, which is Yahweh's chosen people.
That is building the family.
It's building the family.
Mm-hmm. A home for his family.
So you've got Yah's building up, and,
mm-hmm.
and why would they put that in there, these great scholars, and then not put it in everywhere else? So who's,
yeah, it's pretty amazing,
are they lying
the
first time, or are they lying this time?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that Bana is essentially the Hebrew word for son, Ben.
Yes.
Made feminine with the hey at the end of it.
Yeah.
And you say, wait a minute. Well, that sounds like, you know, what the folks in North Carolina are trying to get away from. You can't have, you know, bathrooms for whatever. You can't have a son that's a girl. Oh, is Yahweh promoting transgenderism? No. The Hebrew word, you know, in Hebrew, there is no neuter name for child, sons and daughters. Well, if you want to create a neuter name for child, and to be inclusive, an inclusive name for child that would include sons and daughters, Bana would be it, wouldn't it? First two letters are son, the last letter is daughter, female. So Bana would be inclusive. So it speaks of a family that is inclusive, sons and daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And it speaks of Bana's, the primary definition is to build a home and establish a family. The sons and daughters.
Well, why would you build a home if you're not going to put a family in it?
Well,
I mean, come on.
You know, Ben is the Hebrew word for son. Ben is written with only two letters. One is the Bah or Beth, which is depicts the floor plan of a home with only one way in, and so it is a home. And the Nun, the other letter, is drawn in the form of a sperm.
Yes,
a child in a home is Ben. So,
if you look at it that way, you've got the family home is
uh-huh.
for the inheritance.
Mm-hmm.
The children.
Right. That is correct. So Bana would be, it's the home for the children who are observant, standing up, noticing, and reaching up.
Observing.
Yeah, observing God.
Walking with you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there you go.
Down the path. So I've got
Bana.
Pages on those two words just because I thought I'd save up for when we actually get to that section.
Yeah, we will. And an amazing concept. I mean, just what you can learn is so phenomenal if you just take the time.
Well, I'm
and yet, and what was so interesting, of course, is the Christians are when this fellow wrote me, and we... I would constantly say, you know, you're missing the point. This is what God said. And he would constantly say, well, I can't believe that, you know, the argument is called argumentum ad populum. It means to use the fallacy of believing that because many people believe the same thing, that it must be true.
Yeah,
and rather than doing a bit of investigation, you know, studying, going and doing some research to determine whether or not those are the words that were conveyed, and whether or not they are properly defined, which would have taken the individual 30 minutes to do. If you're talking about words in one sentence,
mm-hmm.
maybe an hour to do.
Tops.
Instead, spent days writing back to me and says, I still can't believe that what you say is true.
Yep.
And you just go, huh? I mean, what is it about actually taking some responsibility, some initiative, and looking up the words yourself?
Well, if it's disturbing you enough to send you an email, then why don't you look it up to prove he's wrong if it's disturbing you?
Correct. Correct.
And then when you find out he ain't lying about it, because there it is, and any darn fool can figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when Moshe gave the Torah,
mm-hmm.
handed it down Yahweh dictated to it, and he handed it down to these people he had just pulled out. They were slaves. Most of them were illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell me they went to school and they were all educated.
Oh, yeah.
And the Lowy were not particularly educated.
Mm-hmm.
And
there were no universities.
There
were no seminaries, no universities.
Did they go to?
Correct. There were no seminaries, no universities.
But he said, observe the Torah.
By the way, you didn't even have to be literate.
No, he is.
To read the Torah, because all of the letters were drawn in the forms of pictures, and all you had to do is look at the letters, and you could read the words.
Mm-hmm. And if you could, what does that mean? He would say, okay, now, look, let me show you, because he would teach them. He would teach them. He didn't tell them. He was teaching them. Look at this letter. This is what we use for a house. This is mm-hmm. this is what it means.
Yeah.
So there you have it.
It's only 22 of them. They're all drawn as symbols, and what I'm doing is take an hour and say, let me draw the symbols out, and most of them are just so obvious. There's an eye. There's a foot. There's a floor plan for a home. There's a hand reaching down and out to us. There's a person standing up, reaching up, and looking up. There's a shepherd's staff.
And if you've noticed about the shepherd's staff, where it was always drawn with the hook down at the bottom?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Now, every time you see a picture, artists always run it with the hook up on the top, where like Moshe is standing or Charlton Heston is standing mm-hmm. there with a hook on the top.
Uh-huh.
I thought it interesting that the hook down at the bottom was significant, because what do you do with the hook down at the bottom?
You save sheep. Yeah, you save your sheep. That's correct. Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. And so it just flabbergasted. And in this particular case, the passage that he finally admitted that was had caused him to have a conniption fit was found in An Introduction to God. And in An Introduction to God, it gives you, long before you read this passage, because it comes from the Word chapter of An Introduction to God, it gives you every letter in Hebrew, what the letters mean, gives you every stem, every conjugation, every mood, every interlinear that you need to use, every dictionary that would be a benefit to you, where you'd go to find the oldest manuscripts, and then how you go about translating words with this.
Yeah.
And in this particular statement, his conniption fit was over Zoroa, because all of the English Bibles that he favored translated or rendered Zoroa as arms. So the first thing I pointed out is this: Zoroa is not Zoroim. It's singular. It's not plural. It's not arms.
Yeah, no arms.
No, there's no. So it's not arms. I have always taken the approach of, since there is a Hebrew word for arm, and it's not Zoroa, and since there is a Hebrew word for shoulder, and since there is a Hebrew word for hand, and all these kind of things, that I've always taken the approach that if there's a unique word that you're looking at, why do you use that word? Why is it singular when the only the definitions you seem to be able to read for it are all plural? What's going on here? And then one of the things that I must have learned this a decade ago,
mm-hmm.
is that there is a unique word that requires a definition for it to be credible. The first time God uses it, he provides the definition. Yeah. And so what I did is I looked at the first time Yahweh used Zoroa, and the second time, and the third, and the fourth, and the fifth. And you know what I found out? Every time he used it, he was talking about the sacrificial lamb of Passover.